Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. It's great having you join me today for another fantastic conversation that absolutely will change your life. You know, I am all about empowering people with truthful information so they can make the most informed decisions possible regarding their health and well-being. And in the world today, there's a lot of information out there, but not all of it is going to get you where you want to go. So the purpose of this show is to bring to you the most informed and dedicated people who really have pieces of the puzzle and have done a lot of work to provide you with the best information, the best solutions. And today we're going to be discussing and exploring the topic of fatigue and fibromyalgia. We're going to talk a little about dementia. We have a lot to discuss. And we're going to have this wonderful conversation with Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. And it's great that Dr. Teitelbaum is able to be with us. He is a very busy man. He is the director of the Fatigue and Fibromyalgia Practitioners Network. He is the author of the popular free iPhone and Android application, Cures A to Z, and the best-selling book, From Fatigue to Fantastic, Pain-Free 1-2-3, a proven program for eliminating chronic pain now, the Beat Sugar Addiction Now series, Real Cause, Real Cure, and the Fatigue and Fibromyalgia Solution. He is the lead author of 4 studies on effective treatment for fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome, and a study on effective treatment of autism using NAET. Dr. Teitelbaum does frequent media appearances, including Good Morning America, CNN, Fox News Channel, and Dr. Oz Show, and Oprah and Friends. And he's lucky enough to live in Kona, Hawaii. And it's my great pleasure to welcome Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum to the show. Aloha.
Aloha. Welcome. It's good to be with you, Cheryl.
It's so wonderful to have you. You are such a passionate and dedicated practitioner looking at the best solutions possible for people. And we're going to be talking about a really serious problem, fatigue and fibromyalgia, and, you know, you can throw in chronic fatigue syndrome. I know we're going to be exploring all these issues and a whole lot more. Before we get into the meat of the matter, I guess we want to ask you, what was it that made fatigue and fibromyalgia a focus of your work and research and your writing?
Oh, well, I got into it the old-fashioned way. I came down with it. I was in medical school and got caught in a family meltdown, emotional meltdown, and as often people who tend to be the problem solvers or the, you know, the healers in the family tend to be empathic. And I just basically got caught in the middle of it, came down with a drop-dead flu, and crashed and burned. And basically I had to drop out of med school for the year. The doctors and professors had no clue what was going on. They knew there was some kind of a virus infection. They couldn't identify what it was. And I still couldn't get out of bed 6 weeks later. And I had to drop out of school and found myself homeless, living in parks. It was a funny thing, though. You know, it's there I was. It's as if the universe put a homeless medical school on my park bench. And homeopaths came by, naturopaths came by. I almost became a naturopath. That's a whole other story. The universe kind of pushed me back into medical school, though. I guess I figured that's where I would have more credibility to do the stuff I needed to do. And, you know, all these different energy healers came by, and I learned all these different pieces of the puzzle. And it's by putting all these different pieces of the puzzle together that I was able to recover from chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia. I went back to medical school, did great, and have spent the last 35-plus years researching, writing, teaching, and basically developing effective treatments for fatigue and fibromyalgia. And this has led into a host of other areas, including pain management in general, and even we mentioned about things that help dementia and things for day-to-day life. So it's been quite a wonderful journey. And in retrospect, having come down with chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia was one of the best things that ever happened to me. Difficult, and I mean, it was incredibly traumatic. You know, when I dropped out of med school, I figured my life was over. My whole life was geared to being a healer, and I figured that was it. But it opened my eyes to how much more there was to learn, how much more could help people. And, in fact, right now what we're doing is working to bring practitioners. I'm creating my own little homeless medical school workbench for the entire planet of practitioners to bring them together to start communicating and teaching each other. It turned out to be a really good thing.
So what looked like the end of your career was the beginning of your life's purpose.
It looked like the end of my life and was the beginning of my realizing what I really wanted to do in life instead of living a life that I thought I should do.
Yeah.
I started to live who I really was. I started to be authentic. And what an incredible, amazing gift that was.
Absolutely, because the issue of fatigue and the ongoing chronic conditions of fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome, which I know you'll explain if they're really different things or the same thing, are huge. It's really an epidemic of fatigue, to, I guess, on the spectrum of fatigue and how exhausted our system is. So let's, well, first of all, how serious do you think the issue is of fatigue and fibromyalgia in our culture?
It's major. Just looking at chronic people who are chronically fatigued without fibromyalgia, but people who complain of being fatigued for months at a time to where it's really impacting their life, 31% of adults, almost a third of adults, have fatigue as a major limiting factor in their lives. We're looking at about 4% of the population that has the worst kind of fatigue, the chronic fatigue syndrome of fibromyalgia, where it literally is disabling and the focus of their life, and it's growing. And this is an epidemic that's skyrocketing. And what these all have in common is they all represent reflections of the human energy crisis. And we are having the perfect storm for an energy crisis. We have over half of our calories have been stripped of vitamins and minerals. You look at sugar, white flour, added fats. All the calories are there, but literally half the vitamins and minerals and other key micronutrients have been pulled out of the diet. We have people who are both obese and malnourished for the first time in human history. Sleep, the average night's sleep until 130 years ago, average, was 9 hours a night. And then Thomas Edison developed light bulbs. We're now down to 6 3/4. That's a 30% pay cut. We've got 85,000 chemicals in the environment. We've got digestive problems because of the loss of food enzymes and food processing that are overwhelming our immune system, along with candida overgrowth from the antibiotics and sugar. So people are facing the perfect storm, as I mentioned, for an energy crisis, and they're starting to blow a fuse, which is what CFS and fibromyalgia represent. So the trick is to simply learn how to restore energy production optimally. It's not to avoid modern life, and it's not to be afraid of modern life. It's to give your body the tools so that you can embrace it and thrive in it.
So we do have a continuum from being tired and fatigued and exhausted to being so absolutely, you know, depleted that you can't move. Let's start with just fatigue, because I see such an epidemic, if we're going to use that word, which can be applied to so many conditions going on. It's almost like it doesn't have any meaning anymore. Epidemics everywhere. But anyway, I see a huge issue in my practice with adrenal exhaustion. And I know you write a lot about it. You talk a lot about it. And I think we need to just spend a little time explaining the adrenals and the role of the adrenals and why the symptoms of insomnia and tiredness and hormonal imbalance and inflammation are all related to this depletion of this key glandular system organ, the adrenal glands, and, you know, and what we need to do about it.
It's a biggie. The adrenal gland is our stress handler. It makes a number of hormones. And if you think of, remember the fight and flight reaction that we were all taught about back in biology and in high school. And it basically is a bugler that sounds the alarm to either fight or flight. So it gets your adrenaline going. It gets things on high alert. And it does this in part by making a hormone called cortisol. And in most of human history, high alert would only be sounded, say, every 6 months. You'd see a bear or a tiger, or there'd be an attack going on. But most of life living out in the village or wherever was pretty calm, and, you know, and you'd have 3 6 months to recover from the stress. Nowadays, we're setting off those alarms 20, 50, 100 times a day. You hit a red light, you know, you're late for work, the alarm goes off. You watch TV and you watch, and instead of today's news, it's today's crisis and battle is, and, you know, the wars that never end and all these other things. So there's all these things that really are stressing our adrenal stress handler. And after a while, it starts to get exhausted. Now, in standard medicine, there's no such thing as adrenal fatigue or exhaustion. You either have a totally healthy adrenal glands, or they are so dead that it will kill you. Nothing in between, which is kind of scary and incredibly stupid if you think about it. You know, most doctors will diagnose this. They do a blood test called the morning cortisol. And if it's normally it's about 20, if it's over 6, it's fine. So 6.1 is totally normal. 5.9, they put you in a hospital with a med alert bracelet saying it may kill you and put you on 35 milligrams of cortisol and, you know, warn you you're going to die if you don't do these things. So 5.9, death dealing, 6.1, no problem at all, even if you're bedridden. And I sometimes see the lab makes mistakes and does a test twice on the same tube of blood, and routinely they come out 4 to 8 points different on the same tube of blood.
Well, I mean, I don't use blood testing. I use saliva testing, which I believe, much more accurate. And what are your thoughts about that?
Maybe. I think that each of them measure different compartments. My general thing with saliva testing is I think it tends to be helpful until you begin treatment. But once you begin treatment with the hormones, and this is not just the cortisol, but with the estrogen, progesterone as well. You can look at the studies with progesterone, for example. They go to different areas of the body, saliva, urine, blood, and even the tissue juice, levels of tenfold difference or more from one compartment to the other once you start taking it by mouth. So I take all of these tests with a grain of salt. I tend to be kind of a curmudgeon. A new test comes out, and the first thing I'll do is I will get two samples from the same person, put two different names on them, send them to the same lab, and see if it matches. They usually don't. But let me tell you how I diagnose it, though, Cheryl.
Okay, yeah.
I have a very high-tech way to diagnose adrenal fatigue.
Right.
When people come in, I ask them, are there periods where it's like a light switch goes off and you realize that you have 3 minutes to eat or you're going to kill everybody around you? And, like, if the person nods up and down and the person who comes with them is nodding up and down and pointing, you know, rapidly, that's adrenal fatigue. It's known as blood sugar issues. Yeah, because the job of cortisol is to keep blood sugar from dropping during stress. And when your adrenals are fatigued, the blood sugar drops. The cortisol is not there. It drops so low that it gets you, let's feed me now or I will kill you episodes. I tease, if you want to find people with adrenal fatigue, go to waiting rooms for divorce lawyers, or things like that. And you'll see that, you know, because the claws come out and the mood shift, and it wreaks havoc with people's relationships. Now, what I have to do, you know, if when the claws come out, instead of getting defensive or screaming or running for the hills or whatever, just feed the person.
Yeah.
And it will make all the difference.
Yeah. So what are some of the other signs and indications for adrenal fatigue?
Well, you'll see things like dizziness, lightheadedness, repeated respiratory infections, sore throats, swollen neck glands. Those are some of the more common ones. Frequent urination, increased thirst. You want to be careful. Do not salt restrict if you have adrenal fatigue, unless you really, really want to crash and burn. One of the myths of our day is that people should salt restrict, and it's a real bad idea with adrenal fatigue, because the adrenal hormones also are what hold on to salt and keep it in your body. So those would be some of the most common ones. Certainly you'll see fatigue and the other general symptoms that come with it. But that irritability when hungry, you know, maybe low blood pressure kind of stuff, those are the hallmarks of adrenal fatigue. And it responds so well to treatment. You know, that's the nice thing about it.
What are some of your preferred protocols to help people recover from the adrenal fatigue side of things?
Well, there are several things. I will give supplements. I like one called Adrenal Stress End. It's a mix of licorice, adrenal glandulars, vitamin B5, and vitamin C. Those are four key things. I tell people to increase their salt and water intake. And I'm not saying to eat Lipton cup of salt. I'm saying, you know, other processed foods. I'm talking about, you know, get a good sea salt and use it as much as you enjoy, as tastes good to you, and get plenty of water. And I tell people to cut back stress. You know, we talked about things like no matter what channel you're watching, and they're all fictions. I mean, God bless the news networks. I mean, I'm on, but many of them, if not most of them, and you know, but they're fictions, and they're made to scare you so you stay tuned. There's a very simple Tai Chi move that's really, really helpful. I tell people to, you know, pause, calm, center. From a centered place, reach far out to the side. Grab the remote control, turn it at the friggin' TV, and turn off. You know, when you're watching these kind of things that make you grit your teeth. If you're watching TV, it should entertain you and feel good. When it starts feeling bad, turn it off or change the channel. If you think, but I've got to stay educated by what's happening, well, flip through the three major networks covering the same topic. At least two of them are wrong, because it seems like they're on three different planets. And I'll tell you a clue. They're all, I'll show what's the medical term I'm looking for. Oh, FOS is a medical term. And it's just nonsense. It's a fiction. Seriously.
Well, at least you brought a little light to Fox News Channel and CNN when you were on.
Well, hopefully I was a bright light in the wilderness. And, you know, and they're all good people. They really are. And they're fun folks. And but it's understand that it's meant to entertain. And currently, it used to, I remember when I was a kid, the advertising execs had a mantra. And the mantra was, sex sells. God, those were the good old days. Now it's fear sells. You know, and I must admit, I prefer the way it used to be. At least I can watch beer commercials and car ads and still get that. But, you know, it's the bottom line, folks, if you're watching and listening to something, it should be fun. It should feel good. It should be entertaining and hopefully educating a bit or uplifting. And if it's not, turn the damn thing off.
You know, it's such a good point because I actually gave up television. I use Netflix, you know, I use my computer as my entertainment vehicle. But whenever I'm visiting with family or, you know, with friends and that, you know, television is on and the news is on, it reminds me of why I gave it up, because it puts you in a constant state of cortisol production. You are surrounded by news of fear, bombings, economic crash, and people, I'm not sure how much people are aware that listening to that, whether you are consciously listening or it's in the background, is stimulating fear response and stressing those adrenals out all the time.
Yep, look out the window instead. It's much more real, and it's often much more fun.
Yeah, really important. So, so if we don't address adrenals, if we miss the message, if we're not taking care of it, and the condition becomes more chronic, then we move into, a greater stress, a greater impairment of the body, which can be named fibromyalgia, correct?
Yes. And people ask, what's the difference between chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia? And for most people, if you have the problem and you go into your rheumatologist's office, you'll get the label of fibromyalgia. And then you walk out into the hallway and you go next door to the infectious disease doctor and they'll get the label of chronic fatigue syndrome. Same for most people, same process.
And so same thing, different names? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yes. And now there's a small subset of maybe 20% that have pure fatigue without pain. And the way you distinguish these processes from regular day-to-day fatigue is several things. Number one, most day-to-day fatigue, if you take a weekend, you just sleep all weekend. Where with this illness, because it affects the sleep center, you can't sleep even though you're exhausted. So it's that paradox of severe insomnia despite exhaustion, and it doesn't go away with rest. You take 6 months off, it's still staying there, as opposed to regular fatigue. You take a vacation, you feel better. So it's a simple distinction. Tired, achy, brain fog, can't sleep. These are the hallmarks of fibromyalgia. And they represent an energy crisis, as you mentioned earlier, where you basically have blown a fuse, where it gets so severe that a key control center in the brain called the hypothalamus goes offline and stops working properly. It's not damaged at all. It's just under-functioning. And as you said, that area controls sleep. so you can't sleep. It also controls hormonal function. So thyroid, adrenal, reproductive hormones will all be down despite normal blood tests. It controls temperature regulation, so 98.6 is a fever. And it controls autonomic function, blood pressure, pulse, sweating, and gut function. And when you look at that, you now see, you can start to understand this wide array of symptoms that people get and why it's so crazy making for doctors who don't understand the disease and don't know how to tie it all together.
And that's a really good point, because when the system is so stressed and gets to the crisis point, there are many systems within the body that are now compromised. And you have to address these root cause issues, which isn't just one thing. It now is looking at the gut. It's looking at the adrenals, looking at the thyroid. It's looking at blood sugar balance. It's looking at, you know, just ways to, you know, increase absorption, assimilation of nutrients. So that is where you need the expertise of people who can heal at that root cause level.
Mm-hmm. And who know to look for those things. And medicine is good for many things. Fibromyalgia and fatigue and pain, those are not ones that they're good at, though. Mm-hmm. Those are ones that they really and truly suck at. And because of that, when you go to your doctor and the doctor says, you have fibromyalgia, or I don't know what's wrong with you, so you're crazy, which, by the way, is abusive. For the doctor to say, I don't know what's wrong with you, I'm sorry, that's honest. When the doctor says, I don't know what's wrong with you, and implies, so you are crazy, tell him to go to hell. At that point, that's a perfectly good time to say, I appreciate you acknowledging that you are utterly clueless about this disease. And you're doing the same thing they used to do with multiple sclerosis, which is, they called it, you know, basically they consider a form of hysteria. They called it hysterical paralysis, what it used to be called. And they did the same thing with lupus. And it's really okay to tell the doctor at that point, thanks for acknowledging that you're clueless. I'm sorry that you're an idiot and couldn't just say that you're clueless and you have to say I'm crazy because of that, and goodbye. Seriously.
So, and can we also say there are other things that drive this that include things like Lyme disease now? Do you see that connection as well?
There are literally hundreds of infections that can cause you mm-hmm. to blow a fuse. Lyme disease yeah. is simply one of many. The problem with Lyme disease is we have no good tests. The tests either will tell most everybody who has the disease that they're negative, or they will come up positive for virtually everybody. And we don't have a test that's reliable. There's no gold standard. So I prefer to go with breakdowns of when it comes to infections, because the testing is so miserable, not just for Lyme. Does a person have an antibiotic-sensitive infection? And there are certain symptoms like elevated fever, scalps, lung congestion, a history of being allergic to multiple unrelated antibiotics but not to anything else, which tells me it's a die-off, not an allergy. Things like that will tell me this person may well have an antibiotic-sensitive infection. And instead of labeling it Lyme or anything else, I will say, let's give the treatment trial with the antibiotic and see if you improve and see how long you need it for. And especially it boggles my mind. You know, people come in and as part of the history, they say, yeah, and once I took this antibiotic, my fibro and CFS went away for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, which one did you take? And, you know, I said, and then I asked, well, did your doctor give it to you again? And he said, oh, no, I can't do that. And he said, because antibiotics are dangerous. And I said, now, if you had zits, the doctor would throw it at you like candy. But mm-hmm. chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia, oh, no, we can't do that, you know. It gets pretty silly. And then many viral infections. I use different antivirals that are often effective. Candida is the most important infection. In fact, mm-hmm. the protocol that we use for treating, and this is published research that we've done, double-blind placebo-controlled research, showed that by giving what you call the SHINE protocol, S is for sleep support, H is hormonal mm-hmm. support, I is infections, and candida is the number one biggie major one for that, for infections. And is nutritional support, and E is exercise is able. So it's when you go ahead and do those kind of things that people get better. 91% of people improve with an average 90% increase in quality of life.
So I guess the rate of recovery is determined by the degree of how chronic that condition has become. So the longer you've been suffering or the worse the symptoms, the longer it will take to recover from it. What's the average time?
Not really.
No? No.
It's kind of like if you blow a fuse in your home, if you trip a circuit breaker.
Yeah.
And that house can have no electricity for 30 years. And it can have 8 electricians go in who don't know about circuit boxes, who tell the person, everything's fine, you're crazy. And you say, but the light switches don't work. And they say, everything's fine. And then say somebody comes in and he knows about circuit boxes. And he goes, and you see this thing that's tripped off here?
Yeah.
And you turn it back on. It doesn't matter if you blew the circuit 30 years ago or 30 minutes ago. In our experience, it comes back on. Now, if you don't treat what blew the fuse in the first place, you're going to trip the circuit breaker again. But different treatments have different approaches. There's some things where, you know, first things in, you know, first thing out, you know, the longer, however long it took to come, it takes that long to go away. But there's other treatments that are more like turning the circuit back on. And I find that by using the SHINE protocol, and in our study, it didn't matter how long the person had been sick. On average, it had been 8 years, but many were, some were 30 years. And by 3 months, by 99 days, there's an average 75% improvement in quality of life. At 2 years, it was up to average, including non-responders, 90%, actually 91% at that point. It was, and it didn't matter a bit, which is a shock to me in the study, how long they had the disease. So I'm going to disagree with you on that one. It depends on the approach you take. But using the SHINE protocol, the response can be really very quick, but it varies from person to person.
Well, that's good. That's great. I'm sure everyone listening who may be dealing with that is inspired. I have another question. I've come across information that links fibromyalgia and different trigger points that are painful related to low iodine levels. What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. We've lost half of our iodine intake because they're using bromides instead of iodine in the flour these days. And the bromides actually block iodine, so it's a double whammy. And iodine deficiency is a major problem. So it's not like, well, you can lose 50% and be fine with that. Low iodine equals not only increased problems with thyroid, and low thyroid is a major trigger for fibro. So there's a connection there. Low selenium, low iron, all of those will impact thyroid function. But also my concern is that low iodine, I think, is associated with an increased risk of breast cancer. Mm-hmm. There was a study our foundation was going to do looking at iodine levels in tissues of women with breast cancer. But when we did the literature search in preparation for the study, that study had already been done. And it's been documented that women with breast cancer have lower iodine levels in their tissues than those without breast cancer.
Yeah, so that's a big piece of the puzzle that people need to be aware of. What's your favorite form of iodine?
I'm going to give triiodine. It's Europharma or Euromedica. I like 6.25 milligram. They come in 6.25, 12s, and 50s. I would not go with the higher doses unless you have a naturopath or other knowledgeable doctor who's supervising you, because it can cause thyroid blockade. It can actually lower thyroid function. The 6.25 milligram I consider very safe. The 12.5 is pretty safe too. But and I tell people, take them for 3 months, see how you feel. And at that point, for most people, again, there are exceptions, but for most people, taking the 200 micrograms a day, and the vitamin powder that I use is called the Energy Revitalization System Vitamin Powder. That one's by Enzymatic Therapy. Has 200 micrograms of iodine, and that does a good job at maintaining optimal iodine levels. I tell people, get 3 months worth of the triiodine and just take it and see how you feel. Two cautions: if you get acne or if you get severe heartburn, stop it. But those are very, very unusual.
Okay, I have one other question before we take a break. It's often been recommended to paint your skin with some form of iodine, and if it's absorbed rapidly, what are your thoughts? Yeah, I don't prescribe it, but you know, it's a popular thing out there.
Even David Brownstein, who's a friend of mine, who's brilliant, and he wrote the book Iodine, which everybody should read. And in his book, he talks about that. And I asked him, David, do you really do those tests? And he says, no.
All right.
You don't need to. Just give the person the iodine. It's the most reliable test is you give the person the iodine, and at the end of 3 months, you know they're not iodine deficient, and you'll see how they feel to boot.
Well, you know, as you were saying, you know, at those lower doses, it's not going to create problems. And if you find yourself getting some stomach reactions or acne, that's a sign that your body isn't liking
it. It's not a sign that your body doesn't need it. The acne suggests that you have plenty. But the indigestion can be a reflection that... it's like you have a scrape. If you have a scrape, you put iodine on a scrape, it's going to hurt. You put on a Taxkin, it won't hurt.
So you may be dealing with, like, H. pylori in your stomach?
Or any cause of gastritis and still need the iodine, but not by mouth.
Not by mouth. What's the option?
Well, you can put it on your skin.
Okay, that's when you could put it on your skin.
Yep, or just take the 200 micrograms a day in the vitamin powder, because it's a dose phenomenon. It's a high dose that causes it. The lower doses are not going to do that.
Okay. Good. Well, I'm glad we cleared that one up. That's great. Good distinction. So this is a good place to take a break, and we will be right back. We are talking to Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. He's the author of the Fatigue and Fibromyalgia Solution, amongst many other books. His website is www.endfatigue.com. I recommend you go visit and learn about it. And you are listening to What Women Must Know. I'll be right back, and we will continue our conversation. Welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You are listening to What Women Must Know, and today we are talking to Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. He is the author of The Fatigue and Fibromyalgia Solution, and his website is www.nfatigue.com. So, Dr. Teitelbaum, let's go over your SHINE protocol, since that is such a profound understanding and treatment program for people who are dealing with issues of fatigue and fibromyalgia. I want to be sure people really understand some of the steps they need to be taking.
And the things we're going to talk about here will also be very helpful for a lot of people with day-to-day fatigue as well. So for anybody who wants more energy, and also for those of you who have pain, you'll be amazed how pain is like the oil light on the dashboard. This is something needs attention. It's not an outside attack. When you put oil in your car, the pain goes away. When you give your body what it needs, the pain goes away the same way. So the oil light goes out to put in oil, and when you use SHINE, the pain will go away as well as fatigue in many, many cases. So let's start with S, which is sleep. First, you want to make time for enough sleep. We talked about cutting out things in your life that you do not enjoy. Keep the things that feel good. Get rid of the things you don't enjoy. So, for example, when the because people say, I can't make 8 hours of sleep a night. So when the chairwoman of 1,000 ways to waste everybody's time comes walking down the street and you see everybody running for the alleyways and you're there like a deer in the headlights, and, you know, she comes up to you and says, oh, we need you to be the chairperson of this waste everybody's time committee, you now have doctor's orders from me. And, Cheryl, you may want to, if you corroborate, and you have two doctor's orders, saying, oh, I wish I could, but the doctor said they would wring my neck if I take on one more thing. I'm so sorry. And then run for the alleyways with the rest of your friends. So cut out things you don't enjoy to make time for sleep. If you have insomnia, trouble sleeping, there's a mix of six herbs. It's called the Revitalizing Sleep Formula. It will leave most people sleeping like puppies. Take 2 to 4 at bedtime. You can take it every night or just when needed. It increases in effectiveness over time. Really, really good. That's my first line thing that I give people. For some people who the main problem is that they're tired all day, but their mind is wide awake at bedtime, and 10 p.m., and suddenly they have their energy and their brain wakes up. That's when the adrenal is having a switch in its day-night cycles. So you may have low blood sugar during the day, and at night your cortisol is too high. Now, using the herb ashwagandha and the supplement phosphatidylserine, you can find both of these together, several products. One is called Cortisol Manager. Another one is called Sleep Tonight. They're both very, very good. for that kind of wide awake at bedtime problem. And then lavender, the smell of lavender. You can take some lavender oil and put a drop on your pillow, or spray some lavender on your pillow as well, or put a drop on your upper lip. All of these things help sleep. A little bit of melatonin, 1.5 milligram. A hot bath before bedtime. For people with fibro, try this, especially in the wintertime if you live in cold weather areas. A tub of hot water, add 2 cups of Epsom salts. Those are magnesium salts. And soak. And feel those tight muscles melt. And the magnesium actually soaks into the body and helps in general. The heat will also relax everything. Don't go straight to bed after, because you'll sweat like a pig if you do that. Instead, wrap up in a nice comfy robe, you know, get your hair dry, or put a towel around your head, read a nice boring book, or watch something relaxing, and take an hour and do, you know, to ease into bedtime, and then go lie down and go to sleep. And you'll see that these simple things will make all the difference and will leave most people feeling, you know, like little teddy bears and kittens in bed. Now, in fibromyalgia, because the sleep center is not working, you do sometimes need to use the medications. But you need to be careful, because some medications actually worsen deep sleep. So you want medications. There are ones like trazodone. Neurontin is actually a good one. And there's a number of others that actually improve sleep quality without the addictive problems, as opposed to Valium-type medications, which are addictive and force people into light sleep. So I can get virtually everybody. I mean, there's been maybe 5-10 people over the 3,000-plus fibro people I've treated that I've not been able to get good, solid sleep over the last 35 years.
And because we're talking about sleep, I think it's important to just mention why sleep is so vital for our body's ability to heal and repair.
That's funny. I used to think of that as like a waste of 8 hours a night when I was a kid. But sleep is when you make growth hormone. That's the fountain of youth hormone. And that's what also keeps you, and that's when tissue repair goes on. It's kind of like the road work. You'll see that on a lot of the busy highways. The road crews come out at night when everybody's asleep and the roads aren't busy. And it's the same in our body. We don't have to be putting a lot of energy into these other day-to-day affairs that we're doing. And that's when our repair crews come out. And that's one reason why poor sleep has been shown to be a key cause of pain, because those little wear and tear, micro tears and things that happen throughout the normal day don't get healed when you don't sleep. In addition, you don't sleep, your immune function doesn't work properly. Poor sleep has been associated with an average 6.5-pound weight gain, because growth hormone causes loss of fat. And leptin is also produced during deep sleep, which causes satiety. So sleep does a lot more than just leave your brain and your body feeling refreshed in terms of energy. It really is critical for feeling healthy and young and vital overall.
Yeah, so the fact that, you know, some of those strategies with the herbal formula you mentioned, or if that wired and tired feeling is there, so you just can't unwind, and using phosphatidyl serine is one of the things you recommended. What was the other one you recommended?
Ashwagandha.
I often like using a GABA formula too, which seems to really help.
GABA can be very helpful. I find if I'm giving enough GABA, though. What kind of dosing do you use?
Well, I use a special formula that is a pharma-GABA that really is crossing the blood-brain barrier. So it has a more effective outcome than just using plain GABA. So it just depends on the person. But I'm prone to stress. I'm prone to anxiety. So I use the product that I like. It's called GABAMAX, that has, you know, other components to it. And I tell you, within 15 to 20 minutes, I'm in my zen space again. And sleep just is really deep if I'm finding that I can't get those deep sleep nights. So it's just something that I've been adding to my arsenal. But I love the fact that you have some other products as well.
What company makes that one? Who makes GABA?
Pure Life.
Pure Life. I'll have to look into
Pure
it.
Life.
The problem with giving straight GABA is by the time you get enough to be sleeping, you're going to get nauseated. So it sounds like you found a way.
You'll love it.
So let me look into that. Awesome.
Anyway, let's get back to the SHINE protocol. What else do we need to know?
So for those with sleep apnea, for restless leg syndrome, let me just mention, that's not a recruit deficiency, it is an iron deficiency. Get the ferritin blood test for iron up over 60, and you'll find restless leg syndrome settles down. Adding magnesium helps as well. H is for hormonal support. And the, as you mentioned, the area that goes offline, that circuit breaker, controls hormonal function across the board. So thyroid is going to be low. And again, the tests are not reliable. The way you tell you need thyroid is tired, achy, weight gain, cold intolerant, brain fog. Sounds a lot like fibro. And the average weight gain in fibromyalgia is 32.5 pounds average, done in two studies in her office. So I give thyroid. There's a lot of different forms. Some people do better with the desiccated, some with the synthetics. But you adjust it to see what feels best for the person. Adrenal, we've talked about. Hormone replacement therapy. 70% of men with fibromyalgia are in the lowest 30th percentile of the normal range for the testosterone levels, and they need bioidentical testosterone. In addition, women, critical for sleep, estrogen, and especially progesterone. No progesterone, you're not going to sleep. And again, as you know, and most people listening already know, use only the bioidenticals if you're going to use the hormones. These synthetic hormones have, well, there's two main benefits of the synthetic hormones over the bioidentical. One is they're patentable, and therefore they're very profitable for the drug companies. And the other, and probably the more important benefit, is that people die younger because it kills them. And with their Social Security system looking at going bankrupt, the more people out there taking synthetic hormones and dying young, the less of a stress it'll be on the system. But outside of that, I don't see any reason to use the synthetic hormones. So it's just insane to be using those. The I would be infections. We've talked about those as well, too. But the number one infection to treat is candida. There's no test that I would spend a nickel on. For candida, if you have nasal congestion, sinusitis, or spastic colon, gas, bloating, diarrhea, or constipation, I will treat for candida. Now, you do that by avoiding sugar, using a good probiotic. There's a host of natural antifungals, and I will go with the medication Diflucan for 6 weeks. Other infections, again, we had mentioned those, and there's a host of ways to go after those. The one thing I will note is that the single, probably or arguably most important nutrient for immune function is zinc. And when you have chronic infections or inflammation, your body will pee out and lose the zinc, causing zinc deficiency and then making it harder to fight the infections. We see this in AIDS, where the HIV virus results in massive zinc losses. And the initial immune dysfunction seen in people with HIV is not from the virus. It can be traced entirely to the zinc deficiency. It's what you will see when people have that low level of zinc. And we see the same thing in fibromyalgia. So you want to be getting about 25 milligrams of zinc a day for 3 months. And also, in addition, the energy revitalization system vitamin powder that I use will have 15 milligrams of zinc in it, which is good for maintenance.
Can I just jump in here for a second?
Uh-huh.
When I do my workshops, I bring along a product called Zinc Tally that actually is a way to assess if you have adequate levels of zinc. So by a taste test, because zinc actually enhances your taste buds. So if you're low on it, you're not going to taste things. Anyway, I hardly find anybody who can pass that test.
Mm-hmm.
So it just reinforces everything you're saying. We're so zinc deficient right now.
The American diet is awful. It truly, and it's called the Standard American Diet, or SAD, which is a perfect acronym for it. It's, like I say, it's the first time in human history we're seeing obesity and malnutrition combined in the same people. It's just, it's really, really nuts. And because of that, people ask, well, what vitamin do I need or what mineral do I need? And the answer is all of them. And I don't want people taking handfuls of pills all day. It gets, you know, people get tired of being part of the handful club really quickly. And that's why I like powders. The Energy Revitalization System Vitamin Powder, which is awesome overall nutritional support for everyone. It has 50 key nutrients. It has them at optimal levels. And instead of 35 to 60 pills, which is what, you know, I challenge people to get what's in that one drink in less than 35 pills. And this is when I'm lecturing to the nutrition conferences with the, you know, MD, PhD, registered dietitians and all the rest there. And They can't do it. It takes most people 60 pills to get what's in one drink. It just keeps it easy for people.
And we want it easy. It's got to be easy. We don't want. I try to do my best to just keep the recommendations down to just the core things, so we don't have to be rattling around and spending a fortune. Really.
Yeah. I mean, my morning energy fix is easy. I take one scoop of the Energy Revitalization System vitamin powder. I throw in a scoop of Korvalin, which is ribose. Our recent study was published on Korvalin on ribose, showing an average 61% increase in energy at 3 weeks, which is, blew us away. I do that. I add water. I stir. It's the best 30 seconds of the day for energy. And then I take a coenzyme Q10, 200 milligrams. And instead of 8 fish oil pills, there's one called Vectomega. That one's by a company called Europharma. You just, one a day, gives the same levels of essential fatty acid into the tissues as 8 big honker fish oil pills without burping up fish oil all day. So it's a real easy thing. It doesn't cost much, and it takes me 30 seconds, and I'm good for the day. And then I don't worry about it.
Well, that's the way you want to go. I know we want to talk a little bit about dementia. We only have a little bit of time left. Do we want to transition into that? Is there anything important that you have not touched on before we do change?
Yep, let me give two things. One is a shameless plug. My book, The Fatigue and Fibromyalgia Solution. My old book, From Fatigue Fantastic, has been the number one best-selling book on the topic for 15 years, and now got bumped off the number one mark by the new book, The Fatigue and Fibromyalgia Solution, which is a nice, simple, quick, easy read, as opposed to the earlier book, which was a textbook. So that's a shameless plug. The other thing for people is we have what we call the Energy Analysis Program. If you go to www.endfatigue.com, it basically, it stems from what we created in the past, which was a computerized doctor. I hold the U.S. patent for a computerized physician that we made for people with CFS and fibromyalgia, because not everybody can spend what it costs to have a 3-4 hour visit with me. And I treat people from all over the world by phone. And it's a good value, but it's not cheap. So we made the energy analysis program. You can go on, take some simple quizzes. If you have lab work, it'll even analyze the pertinent lab tests, although they're not critical. It'll analyze all that, tell you what's causing your fatigue and how to optimize your energy. It basically took my brain and computerized it. We used to charge $400 for that. We told people if they couldn't afford, they could do it for free. 80% of people came back and said, I'm disabled with a disease I can't afford. So my wife and I decided we just made it free for everybody. So it's online at endfatigue.com. You have your own computerized Dr. T and a computer program, and it's free.
Well, I mean, that is a phenomenal resource, so just thank you for everybody, I'm sure, who feels the same way.
Well, Cheryl, our goal has been very simple, is to make effective treatment available for everybody with this illness, and this is just part of it. It's one piece of how we do that, and you're welcome. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. I do want to say that by the time people seek out alternative approaches, they have spent a fortune going to all the doctors who haven't been able to do anything.
Well,
so they are.
They've convinced them they're crazy.
Yeah. So then their financial situation becomes another source of extreme stress.
Mm-hmm. Let me give a simple rule of thumb. How expensive something is has absolutely nothing to do with how effective or safe it is.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. So the same treatments that cost $50,000 may be no more effective and less effective even than 10 cents worth of zinc a day, as an example. So you don't have to have a lot of money to get well. We have an article on how to get well with this disease if you have virtually no money.
And the key is just knowing what is required so you can hit the bullseye.
Yes.
Otherwise, you spend a lot of money doing a lot of things, but never getting the result.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So know that there's hope.
Yeah.
No matter what a person's situation is, there truly is hope with this. Speaking of hopeless, we talked about Alzheimer's disease and how it's treated in the United States and how you can actually get well from dementia and Alzheimer's in many cases.
Well, we've got about 7 minutes, so let's go for it.
Okay. So,
and if not, we'll get you back for another show. We can have a whole hour to discuss these things. But let's give us some highlights of what you found.
highlight number one. A recent study out of Hawaii actually showed that they did autopsies in people who had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. Fully half of them turned out not to have Alzheimer's disease. They had other things. Don't remember.
What was it?
Oh, all kinds of different things. A lot of times they had no clue what it was. But what we know is that half of the people out there who have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease don't really have it. And even those that do, there are many things that you can do to improve function. And those who live with somebody with Alzheimer's, you know that some days they recognize the kids, other days they don't recognize the kids. It's not that the Alzheimer's goes away one day and comes back the next. It's that a small change in mental functioning is all the difference between being able to take care of yourself and be independent versus not recognizing your kids. It may be a 2 to 5% difference. So you don't have to cure everything for the person to function. You just have to tune up the brain enough to get 5% improvement in function. And that's not hard to do. But most doctors never think in those terms. So we have the protocol, whether one has Alzheimer's or dementia of any cause, and we call it this week, we have SHINE for chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia. We've got the dementia protocol, which is a checklist for how to tune up the brain in people with dementia. And you'll often see that people's dementia will go away and certainly will usually improve. So why don't I just go down quickly what dementia is. And the protocol D stands for drugs. Not the drugs you give them. In my humble opinion, the Aricept and Namenda, which are the two things that doctors use for Alzheimer's, are, I don't want to say useless. Once again, they have the major benefit of being very profitable for the drug companies, but they don't improve cognitive function. They may slow down the decline a little tiny bit. The most important way to use drugs to get well is to get people off of them. I see people in their 80s who are on 15 different medications. Cheryl, if you or I were on those medications, we'd be arrested for DWI.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, there's many, if not most of those medications, are truly no longer needed. Just nobody ever bothered to stop them because it takes much more time to stop medicine than to add one. So find a good naturopath to sit down with, go through the medication, see which ones can be eliminated safely. And you'll
like statin drugs.
Oh, God. Oh, that's a whole other show.
Right?
Let me just spit for a moment and then we'll go back to that.
Stir
so
you up here.
But you'll see that dementia is often just drug side effects. So E would be emotional. Sometimes anxiety, depression will mimic dementia. Also, lack of sleep causes emotional poor function, poor mental function, so making sure they're getting solid sleep and they don't have sleep apnea or restless leg syndrome. M would be metabolic. Those same hormonal things, low thyroid, low testosterone in men, both have been associated with a marked increase in dementia. You tune up all of the hormones and mental function improves. The next E in dementia is eyes and ears. Hearing loss and vision loss can mimic dementia. Mm-hmm. And as nutritional support, we've talked about that, a good vitamin powder, like I mentioned, the CoQ10, I would probably even go with the ribose in those settings, but most importantly, the fish oil, like the Vectomega, because the brain is made of DHA, which is one of the two key essential fatty acids in there. T would be tumors and other brain lesions. You need to have an MRI of the head to rule out things like that. I would be infections. So often you'll see sinusitis. You'll see these guys, you know, with the dementia, they're always clearing their throat from the postnasal drip. And they have sinus infections. They have bladder infections. And unlike in the 20s and 30s, bladder infections in the 70s, 80s, and 90s are often silent. They may not cause any symptoms, but they will still drag the person down. And just like when you have a cold or an infection, your brain's fuzzy. So look for and treat the infections. And then I would be anemia and other overt, obvious medical conditions. So we'll do that I do that by phone with people, just like I treat fibromyalgia and CFS. I will do phone consultations. We'll do consultations with family members for people with dementia. And we'll go through all their old medical records and do a tune-up. And very often, the person gets their mind back. It's a fun thing to watch. So that's how's that in a five-minute nutshell for how to treat dementia and Alzheimer's.
I just want to say that's so profound because
we put these labels on people as these functions start to fail, but we don't understand what could be driving it, the root cause issues, and what can help recover those functions by addressing those issues. So that's, you know, that's what you've done. And, I'm very grateful for your research, because it's what the message has to be. We need to understand we can heal these conditions. We just can't label them.
A quick thought, Cheryl. Do you want to give the American Academy of Naturopathic Physicians website? And I'll give abihm.org for holistic MDs.
Well, let's go give your website again, which is nfatigue.com. I recommend Dr. Teitelbaum's book, The Fatigue and Fibromyalgia Solution. And do you want to give your other network, too?
Yes, for health practitioners of any background. I want to get the health practitioners speaking with each other and sharing information. We have a new network. It's called the Fatigue and Fibromyalgia Practitioners Network. Go to vitality101.com/FFPN. F like Frank, F like Frank, P like Paul, N like Nancy. Sign up for the free network so you can teach other people things you found to be helpful. This is for practitioners only, but even whether you're a health coach, nutritionist, all practitioners. And learn, because I'm answering questions on there. If you have health questions about how to help people, come on and ask. I'll be answering those too. And we'll be getting discounts of 7.5% to 15% from major companies for members of the network. And what does it cost? It's free. So come and join at the FFPN, and let's keep the conversation going.
Thank you for such an informative conversation and the wonderful work you're doing, Dr. Teitelbaum. It's just making such a big difference. And to everybody out there, thank you for listening. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. Remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.